Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
In Lincoln's inaugural address, he implored Americans on the cusp of Civil War to find their better angels. They couldn't. Can we? Well, there's a good chance you're crossing your arms and saying no. We've seen people assaulted, even in a couple of cases killed, when they asked others to wear masks. One Trump supporter saw his huge campaign billboards burn along with his farm equipment. Some worry now about civil war. Well, in 2016, a bipartisan group came together to find their better angels. That was their name. Their credo, we reject the normalizing of this extreme polarization. We say no to the breakdown of social life that it brings. They're now called Braver Angels. They help people talk across the political divide. John Wood Jr. is one of their leaders, also a former chair of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County. And John, we understand there were very small beginnings in a barn in 2016 using marriage counseling techniques to bring Republicans and Democrats together. Explain.
Well, so we have a sense of who the other folks are that gets filtered through to us through a partisan media landscape that becomes sort of unrelatable to us. And so we have something called a stereotypes exercise, where each side of the conversation has the opportunity to list out the stereotypes that they see the other side is having about them. But each side gets the opportunity to reflect on what kernels of truth there may be in those stereotypes as well. So conservatives will oftentimes say that we are not racist folks by and large, but there are some racists who attach themselves to our party. We should not make this space a comfortable one for them. Whereas folks on the left will frequently say, look, we're not people who want the government to run everything, and we're not people who mooch off the state, but you have some people who game the system, some people who take advantage of welfare, this, that, or the other. We had folks who were devout evangelical Christians becoming deep friends with people who were Muslims and immigrants, people with dramatically differing politics. There are techniques that we can use that can allow us to communicate across these divides while maximizing our ability to preserve our relationships as Americans.
Give another example.
If you find yourself talking about politics, it is helpful for us to frame our political opinions not as truth statements, but as I statements. If you go into a conversation with somebody who's on the other side of the fence as you are, and you say, well, it's just a fact that Donald Trump has had the best economy of all time, or it's just a fact that Barack Obama has done more for healthcare than any Republican would ever dream, it has the effect of putting the other person on the defensive, to where psychologically what that other person feels that she or he has to do is to respond, to save face, to be able to win the argument, to protect their team. They are no longer listening. Rather, it is better to approach these conversations by saying, well, in my view, President Trump has been good for the economy. Or from what I've learned, it seems that Barack Obama has really pushed healthcare forward in America. And I think that Joe Biden will build on that. When you introduce the aspect of your own subjectivity, you signal a certain humility that shows you're also opening up the space for that person's input to be heard.
How about expressing how you feel? Because Michael Sandel has a terrific book on merit and how merit is oversold, first of all. And by that, he means this idea you have to go to an Ivy League college. That's what success means. When two-thirds of the country have not gone to a four-year school, and many of them are followers of Donald Trump, and clearly telling pollsters that they are made to feel less than. If you're on that side of the Trump side of the equation, can you say that? You make me feel like I don't count.
If you make it with humility, as opposed to lashing out in anger, as opposed to saying, well, you know, you're some, you know, highfalutin college professor, you've got your fancy degree, but just because you've got your degree doesn't mean that you're not totally stupid. You know, there's a way to be able to make that point. Now, one thing I should say, though, is that there are some times and occasions where it probably is best to simply maintain the silence and to maintain the peace that way. And it just depends on the context of the interaction. Another very important one is paraphrasing. Being able to paraphrase the statements that the other party in the conversation makes in a way that reflects the language they might actually use to say it. And so if you are speaking with a conservative who's in favor of lowering taxes, the wrong way to be able to characterize that position would be to say, okay, so you think that by giving greedy rich people more money, that somehow is going to make life better for poor people, right? More likely than not, if you recite that opinion by saying, okay, I hear you saying that by allowing people to keep more of their own money, they'll be able to invest more in the economy, and that will create more jobs and more opportunities for everybody, including lower income folks. You will continue to disagree with that statement, but you will have said it in a way that accurately represents how it is that person really feels. One thing that is powerful is being armed with stories pulled from your own experience. Stories are so often so much more powerful and profound than simple rational arguments.
So would that involve, I'm thinking of someone who maybe comes from an area that's been devastated by COVID-19. They had maybe relatives who were on ventilators. They had maybe new people who didn't make it. And then there's swaths of the country who don't believe COVID-19 is that big a deal. Again, because they've been told that. Would that mean just telling a personal story about witnessing COVID-19?
Oh, absolutely. Being able to tell a story pulled from your community about, you know, how it is that the consequences of not following guidelines has impacted your life adds context to the political or social position that you have. It shows that you're a human being.
And that other person you're speaking with, by the way, might tell you a tearful story about losing a family business, you know, because of a shutdown. Can you just tick through a couple of other techniques?
One thing that is powerful is being able to reflect on the ways in which your side may be falling short of the standards that you hold for, or the ways in which your own argument might not be 100% spot on. So if you say, for instance, you're arguing for single-payer healthcare, let's say hypothetically, and you were to say, look, it's my feeling that the federal government is the best vehicle to guarantee health coverage for all Americans. But I totally think that it's possible to expect too much from government. But I do think that on balance, it would allow us to accomplish the aim of ensuring healthcare and ensuring quality of life for the most Americans. If you introduce humility and some degree of reflection to your political point of view, then the other side is much more likely to take the fact that you are being honest seriously. In order for us to truly build relationships and depolarize across the divide, we have to be able to keep track of our thinking about conservatives or conservatives thinking about progressives in a way that does not allow the stereotype to become the fixture in terms of how we see them.
John Wood, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. Real pleasure.
Well, this is reminding us of a story from 2018. Liberals from Massachusetts, led by Paula Green, reached out to conservatives from Kentucky, including Gwen Johnson. Filled with fear, they said in time, they fell in love. Here's part of our talk. We'll hear from Paula, who is Jewish, but start with Gwen, talking about how eye-opening it was to hear Jewish people talk about the Holocaust.
Well, you know, we had in the early days, the Cofields were a melting pot of all nationalities who came here to work. They learned to live side by side developed a brotherhood. And the United Mine Workers of America was never segregated. And so just to meet the ones who had that history from the Holocaust, it was a rich, rich experience of compassion and love. I've always been aware of the Holocaust, but I could really sympathize when they began to talk about the family experiences around that. It was rich to be among them. It was rich.
Two things came for us. One is the tremendous pride that people had in mining. World War II, the miners were heroes. They couldn't even be drafted because they had to stay home and keep mining coal for the war effort. And the other thing we heard was the tremendous danger and death. People talk about husbands, fathers, brothers, sons dying in the mines, either from black lung or from boulders that fall. So I think the compassion built up on both sides.
You know, we didn't want to let them leave. We wanted to keep them.
That's Paula Green and Gwen Johnson of the group Hands Across the Hills in 2018. They're still talking. We'll catch up after Election Day. We also spoke with John Wood Jr. of the bipartisan civil discourse group Braver Angels.